It's time for Hanson McLean Advisors Money Matters, hosted by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, credentialed financial advisors serving you since 1993.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Glad you are with us on this weekend. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors. Certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself, helping them plan their financial futures. And we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And one thing you'll find on this program is we don't just sit and talk about the stock market and how to try to predict the market. We don't only talk about investments.
We talk a little bit about stock market and investments, a little bit.
Well, and sometimes we spend a lot of time on it, but depending. But it's really about the whole financial process, all the issues in our financial lives that we deal with. And our goal is to help people make wise choices with their dollars so they have some financial independence in their lives. And
well, the reason behind that is the reason most people cannot retire is the amount of debt they have, not the lack of assets, but the amount of debt.
Well, and lifestyle.
Okay. When I shouldn't use that word, most people they can't retire. I think that that's probably not a fair statement since we see a really small cross-section of the population, those people that are preparing for retirement.
All right, yeah.
There's a large percentage of the population that gives absolutely no thought whatsoever to... in fact, I read a study yesterday. Only 48% of the population actually now has an IRA or 401k.
Less. It's gone down.
It was down from 52%.
Less people have a retirement account today than they did 2 years ago.
But the account
these
values...
families, too, it's stated.
These account values are higher, but there's less people that have them.
Well, that's kind of
the dilemma, isn't it?
Yeah, the chasm. By the way, my... on financial matters, my son is junior in high school. We went back on a college tour. My son, for whatever reason, he studies... Well, he does well in school. He's highly motivated, highly driven.
For whatever reason.
Well, I was not quite like that in high school.
Okay.
So we went back east to look at colleges.
But you're not quite like your parents either.
Fair enough. We went back east to look at colleges because he wants to go back east for whatever reason. And so he said... I asked him before on a long flight. I said, hey, son, do you want me to download a couple movies on my iPad that we can watch together? He says, no, I already have a couple then. Actually, we didn't talk. He texted back and forth. So as we're on the plane, the first movie was about it was Occupy Wall Street.
Was he really?
It was Occupy Wall Street, right? And the other one was, it was Roger Moore, some capitalism.
Oh.
It was something about...
Roger Moore?
I forget which movie it was. It was one of Roger Moore's.
Not like Bowling for Columbine.
No, it was about how evil all capitalists are.
Roger.
Except for him.
Except for him, yes.
Except for him, because he's obviously part of the 1%. So, obviously, anyway, so the Occupy Wall Street and they're interviewing these people. I'm like, what makes this person an expert at what they're talking about? And every once in a while, I couldn't help it. I would have to put pause.
Oh, you listened to it. You watched it with
him? I watched it with him. I had to hit the splitter. We had the headphones together.
Oh, you actually watched it with him.
I could not watch the entire Occupy Wall Street thing because I'm thinking, son, hopefully when you go to a university, you'll understand just because somebody says something does not mean it's in fact true.
Correct.
Because the stuff they kept spewing out.
You can own your opinion, but you can't own the facts.
But when people state an opinion like it's a fact.
Yes.
I couldn't help it. And actually, I couldn't finish the whole thing.
But apparently,
he told his mother that got a little frustrated with me when we were watching the movies on the plane.
And he should. As you should.
Part of it might, and I'm thinking, he's a 17-year-old boy. He's supposed to be getting his own. So, I mean, I wouldn't pick movies out.
Bothered your dad?
It's like, oh, let's see, what would really bother my son?
I don't think he'd.
How about, I'm going to get movies on something about the mistakes teenagers make.
I think that you're reading too much into it. Maybe you're not, though. That's pretty smart.
He is a smart kid, and I hadn't thought about this.
Other than the films, how was the trip?
Other than the shooting, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
How was the trip?
We went to Boston, a couple of schools in Boston. You must have gone to MIT. Actually,
wow.
You know what? I said when I come, my second life, maybe this, actually, I don't really believe in reincarnation, but if I come back as
You come back as your cat.
No, I'm going to come back as a Hanson kid.
I want to come back as your cat. That thing that's got nothing going on and it lives the life of Riley.
I didn't know anything about my cat.
You talk about your cat at work sometime.
I don't like that cat.
But, all right, so let's give out the phone numbers.
So, no, real quick here, and then we'll get...
and then we got to do the show.
I understand. This is part of the show.
Okay.
So we went back to Boston and into Washington, D.C., look at several different colleges and all that. The one college we went to, apparently they have the highest tuition in the country, and they must be proud of it because it was the one only college that actually had a PowerPoint slide that threw the number up there like in your face.
Like basically leave. Did anyone get up and leave right then?
I almost left.
Then they say, but we give you tuition assistance if need be, right?
Based on financial need, but not this school, I don't think they had any merit.
Oh, based on, got it.
Said, like, come on, son, this is ridiculous. But in any case, what my point was, I was talking, it was the Occupy Wall Street documentary that...
you get to watch.
And I said, Blake, it would also be nice if they had came up with some other alternative to the evils of capitalism. What other alternative systems looking at? If capitalism is so evil, is it socialism's that the good, communism's the good thing to go to do? And he likes to tell me there was no such thing as true communists because the Marxists wasn't exactly communist.
Of course there's no such thing as true communism.
Of course, otherwise it would be wonderful.
Well, I mean, naturally, right?
That's right.
But communism is a theoretical, and until you involve people, then things get corrupt when people become involved.
Except
it's weird.
We don't become corrupt at Hanson McLean.
Well, everyone's got their own self-interest. It's the question is do you disclose your self-interest or not?
Yes. Now we probably.
But no. Quite frankly, clients would be better off having us do the work for free, would they not?
Of course.
And that's just our self-interest is to be compensated for the work that we provide,
as in every profession.
Yeah. So I explained to a client.
Go back to the cobbler. I'd be better off if these shoes were free.
I was explaining to a client a couple of weeks ago why they should pay off their mortgage, and they said, well, we think we should invest it. And I said, I think you're better off paying off your mortgage. And they said, well, why? And I said, well, based on the portfolio you have, you'd be net ahead if you paid off your mortgage. And I said, and part of that is because of the friction that people like me create in the system, which is...
Pat, creating friction?
No,
that's weird.
Not friction. Not like emotional
Pat
friction.
Pat McLean creating
not like
friction.
Not emotional.
Hurricane McLean creating friction.
Not emotional friction. That just comes with the territory. You were the one that chose to work with the Irish guy.
I didn't quite realize that you were Irish. The McLean, I should have figured out the red hair and the Mc...
Should have
clued me
in. But, you know, actually coming in, I actually noticed, you know, coming
in.
So
your friction, what was you finished? You
the first friction is that there's a cost associated with an investment. And that is friction in a portfolio.
Furthermore, there's conflicts of interest with your advisor. If you have an advisor that generates commission on the product sales, they're going to be incentivized to sell you more. If you have an advisor that charges you an hourly fee, they're going to be incentivized to take more hours to get your work
done.
And
if you have an advisor that charges based on the assets he manages, then they may want to control more of those assets.
Well, they clearly have a conflict.
Yeah, but I think most advisors would have you pay up. Well, that's not true. We like people to be debt-free when they retire.
We think having a mortgage paid off is a great thing.
Yeah, we think that it's better. Most people are better off for it.
The majority. It sometimes makes sense that people have mortgages. But anyway, if you want to be part of the program, Hanson McLean's Money Matters, it's either that or we can continue to talk about our personal lives. to join the show, anything financial related, 921-1530 is the contact number. Again, that's 921-1530. You can also send us a question via email at questions@moneymatters.com. Again, questions@moneymatters.com. Or you can send us a text, 916 area code 229-9999. Again, 916-229-9999. And we'll take some calls when we come back in the break here. Study this year through the third quarter of 2014. The percentage of actively managed stocks that are outperforming the S&P 500. So this study, this was a
stock mutual funds, not
yeah, I'm sorry, stock mutual funds, this study looked at funds that invest in large companies, U.S. large cap.
So compare themselves to the Standard & Poor's 500.
Through the third quarter, only 9.3% of those funds actually beat the S&P 500, the worst we've seen in years and years. And part of that, so you say, why is that? Well, the average large cap The average large cap mutual fund has about 5% in international stocks.
Okay.
So, which have been grossly underperforming. And also, they tend to have some exposure to small cap stocks, which are also grossly.
And they have cash in their portfolio. And an index doesn't have any cash in its portfolio.
But this is it'll be interesting to see if the year it finishes out this bad. But that's where we're seeing through the end of the third quarter. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take some calls, answer some questions. 921-1530 is our number. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us. We're going to go to the calls. If you'd like to join the show, 916-921-1530. We're going to talk to Mark. Mark, thanks for joining Hanson McLean.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thanks for waiting, actually. Appreciate that.
Okay. My son, who had held a job as a lifeguard for several years at a local municipality, had been, as a result, participating in the public agency retirement system, or the PARS system. And he received recently in the mail a notice that this municipality was going to authorize a distribution of his account, presumably because it's a low balance. It's around $1,600.
Mm-hmm.
And he has two options for taking that distribution. One is just
so he has no he has no choice in the matter. It's like because it's under $5,000 or whatever, they're going to just distribute it.
You know, it didn't really say that he had no choice. I called them just to confirm that it was all pre-tax, and they did tell me that. But they said I also asked if he had a deadline. And they said no. So I'm not sure necessarily that he necessarily has to take the distribution.
How old is your son?
25.
Okay. And how many years credit does he have with PARS?
I don't know, 3 or 4.
Is there any chance he's going to do public service work in the future?
I don't think so. He's since moved to New York.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
That answers that question.
So his two choices were a lump sum distribution where they send a check directly to him, withhold 20%. And I know that's bad because there'd be taxes and penalties associated with it.
That's right.
The other was a direct rollover to a traditional IRA, a Roth IRA, or another retirement plan. He doesn't have another retirement plan. But the thing that threw me was they'd make the check out to the financial institution that was the IRA trustee, but they'd send it to my son.
That's normal.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so well, actually,
you would think in this day and age they would just electronically transfer it, but this is how.
So it would actually come out and it would say, you know, to Bill Smith, to the name of the IRA trustee, and then it would say FBO for benefit of, and then your son's name.
Okay.
So that is absolutely normal.
So like right now he has a Roth IRA through Vanguard. If he just calls Vanguard and says, I want to set up a traditional IRA, and that'll be basically like in place for him when this check arrives and he can send it directly off to Vanguard.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's his income right now?
Not a lot.
It might make sense for him to convert this to that Roth.
To put it into a regular IRA and then convert it to the Roth IRA. Because if his income's low, presumably the hope is, both your hope and my hope, that he makes more money in the future, correct?
Right. Uh-huh.
And if that actually comes to fruition, he's going to be glad he had a Roth.
Yes. Okay. I'll consider that because, I'll have to take a look at exactly what his income is. And whether that makes sense for him.
Yeah, I mean, unless he's killing it as a 25-year-old, if he's like most 25-year-olds, that it's just taking a little longer to get your career going these days for most, it would make a lot of sense for him to convert it to a Roth.
Yeah. Okay.
Not only, is he saving anything for retirement now, anywhere?
A small amount, and basically because I'm helping him out.
Okay.
Yeah, take a look at the Roth. So appreciate the call.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah, I wish you well.
Yeah, and actually, I think the name of the fund institution, I would probably buy a Total Market.
No question, 25 years old?
I'd just buy the Total Market. No.
Yeah, and there's some of those, if you work a short number of years, and there have been times when if you go back to work in public service, you can put those dollars back and buy back those years.
Yeah, and you may want to, if you ever thought there was even a chance, you would actually just leave them there. So,
yeah.
All right, we're going to talk to Dave. Dave, thanks for joining Hanson McLean.
You guys are making me laugh. Your humor goes right along with mine. But anyways,
we'll take that as a compliment.
Thank you.
hopefully most people aren't bored stiff of you. There's Dave, the wood guy.
Marxism. I was hoping you were talking about the Marx Brothers.
Okay, oh. I appreciate that.
So anyways, my wife bought an RV 12 months ago.
Your wife bought one?
All right.
There's funny,
isn't it? Along with her. I went with her.
Okay. All right.
That is funny.
She says it's tax deductible.
Could be. Yes. The interest could be tax deductible. What's your question?
My question is, I've been making extra payments on it. You know, like $700 a month. The thing was supposed to be $376 a month. But anyways, I've been paying extra on it. So now I'm looking at my statement, and it says the next payment due is October 22nd, 2015.
Yep.
So I have to tell them to put
on the maybe. Principal. Maybe. Maybe not. What's the interest rate on the loan?
3.97.
All right. And is it a simple – so these are the questions you want to ask. Is it a simple interest loan? Or is it a rule of 78 loan where the interest has actually been computed over the life of the loan and then charged at the beginning of the loan? So
that's a good question. Yeah.
In a simple interest loan, what you're going to do is ask them to apply the extra principal payments to those extra payments to the principal. So what they're doing now is they're applying it as if it's you're prepaying the interest in it. Right, so they're not necessarily applying them to principal.
Most loans are what's called a simple interest loan. Like, go get a mortgage on a house. It's a simple interest loan.
I haven't seen a rule of 78 loan in
computed interest. They're still out there. They're called either rule of 78 or computed interest. And the way these work, and you see those, Pat, I guarantee there's a lot of cars being sold.
Yeah,
this way
and
still.
This is a motorhome. Did you get the financing through the motorhome place you bought the motorhome?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a good. And they've sold it off already.
Yeah, it's a good chance this is a computed interest loan.
What
or,
happens
or
with
rule 78?
What happens with a computed interest loan is they calculate or they compute what the interest charges are going to be over the term of that loan.
So they say, "Hey, this is your payments," and then what they do is they put all the interest payments in the first part of the loan. So if it's a 4-year loan, you're going to all the money you pay down is just going to those
literally
interest payments. And the principal,
so you can prepay, but you're still the interest is already there.
It's already been calculated into it. So if it's a rule of 78 or computed interest loan, quit making the extra payment on it. Stop doing it. If it's a simple interest loan, then just have them apply the excess to principal. My guess is it's a computed interest loan or rule 78. When you talk to them on the phone and they pretend they don't know what you're talking about, it's a good sign that it's a simple interest. It's not a simple interest loan. If they pretend
I won't talk to them on the phone. I'll go face to face in their office.
They're not a finance person at an automobile place acting confused, Pat.
So, but if it's a rule 78 or a computed interest loan, you just need to quit paying on it till October of next year. And then make regular payments. There's no benefit to you whatsoever to prepay that.
All right. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks. That's not what I wanted to hear.
Well,
about.
We could be wrong.
I hope I'm wrong. I could be wrong. I was wrong once.
I was thinking since it's an RV, it's just like a mortgage.
It might be, but it doesn't have to be. Now, mortgages are simple interest, but RVs and cars don't necessarily have to be.
Well, Well, like I started off at the very first there, if it's an RV, it should be a mortgage. If it's not a mortgage payment, then how can I deduct it on my
Oh, it has nothing to do with that. It's whether it has a toilet and a sink, whether you can deduct it or not.
Yeah, that's what my wife says.
Yeah, it doesn't have anything to do with the type of mortgage it is. So I appreciate the call.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. I mean, I'll give you my own example on this.
I bought a car when I was 18, and it was a Rule 78. That's how I found out about it.
I found out the hard way, too.
I had no idea.
Just married. My Volkswagen Jetta, the engine literally fell out. We were pulling into a gas station or something. And the engine, the motor mounts all gave way. And the engine fell to the ground, and the car came to an immediate stop. Because
so you immediately took the plates off the car and ran.
Honey, where's that file of yours? Let's file down those numbers. No. We actually got it running for a little while again after that. But my car was clearly falling apart. And just like a lot of married couples, we had no money at the time.
Mm-hmm.
This was 20-some-odd years ago, before Hanson McLean was formed and all that. And so we bought a used car, a used Toyota Camry. It was burgundy with like this velour interior.
I remember you.
It was about the ugliest Camrys. And Camrys are great cars.
Yeah.
I got a great deal on it because it was an ugly color. And I remember my wife's like, honey, do we really have to get this car? I have no money. We have no money. So we're going to get the most economically friendly car we can get. And so I bought this used Toyota Camry. And I reading through, because, you know, when you're buying the car, there's all these forms. I was reading through the contract later, and I came across this rule of 78. And I started reading it. And I had a degree in finance, so I understood some of the stuff. And I started reading it as computed interest. And I remember thinking, all those finance classes I took in college, I never once came across something.
I didn't either.
Never even heard of it. And so I went in and talked to the one of the managers there, and I said, hey, can you explain this to me? And he explained it to me. And I said, well, I don't want this. And he said, well, if you can get some financing worked out with your local bank or credit union, we'll go ahead and reverse it.
So they hadn't sold the loan yet?
No, it only been a couple days. And so I was able to get that work, but it's something, and you still see them sometimes out here. I have a feeling they're probably more on used cars. I don't think you go to buy a new car from GM or something.
Yeah, I don't think they would do that.
Your ignition's not going to work correctly, and it'll shut off on you. But you're not going to have a problem.
I know. I bought a Ford, and I got $1,000 rebate if I financed it.
Wait a minute. You pay them thousands of dollars in interest, and they'll give you $1,000 today.
So my question was, what's the least amount I can finance in order to get this, and how many payments do I need to make?
What was their catch there?
It was a small amount, and I only had to make 3 payments. I did the math.
You did? That's surprising, Pat.
I did the math. We were still net ahead like $641 or something like that.
Well, I could also say, this question was about RVs.
It was an RV. That was one thing that...
RVs tend to be horrible investments in and of themselves. And I would say a very small percentage of people who own RVs actually get the benefit out of them. Because what we see time and time again, people go out and buy an RV that haven't really spent a lot of time traveling that way.
Yes.
With this idea, this is something they want to do. They take a couple of trips and it sits there. Or they've got this RV, they're paying big payments on it. It costs so much in fuel that they start thinking, we don't have the $800 this month to go do this trip, so they don't do the trip, and the RV just continues to sit there. And
there's a business there, Scott.
RV business, of course there's a
business. No, there's a business where you could get a bunch of seniors together and actually form an RV purchase club.
Okay, you can be working on that, Pat. That's pretty exciting.
I'm not gonna.
Why don't you do that? With a bunch of newly retirees that have nothing but time on their hands.
Oh, that'd be perfect. That's the population
over
you work with.
Overanalyze the whole thing. So here's what, and one of the things that we recommend to people, if you find yourself,
you're thinking about it,
go rent a couple, even the really expensive ones. Find them. They're out there, go on Craigslist.
Rent it for at least 2 weeks.
You can rent big fancy ones too. They're very expensive to rent, but whatever it is to rent is much less than what it's going to cost you when you actually own the thing. Make sure you, in fact, enjoy the experience. I'd do it for a couple times before you went out and bought a motorhome because they just get very expensive. We got to take a quick break here for the bottom of the hour news. When we come back, we'll continue on. 921-1530 is the number. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Hey, Scott.
What's wrong?
I'm Pat McClain.
I'm Pat McClain.
Now, that sounds a little more. You're supposed to be enthusiastic. Remember well, when I was a little we had confused. The radio training 20 years ago? Enthusiasm.
I was kind of confused. Have you ever noticed when you come in the studios, there's the fob that you do, and the back door opens up?
What is the fob? Where'd they get a name of fob? The little thing?
The electronic thing that opens the door. You do the... Have you ever noticed right over that it says essential personnel only? Right above where the fob is, someone has printed out a sign that says in white paper, essential personnel only. Do you think anyone actually goes up there with their fob and goes, I'm out, not the essential guy today?
Well, I think that because I think you're talking about the back entrance here.
Correct.
It, directly into the newsroom. Where it's Saturdays, nothing's happening. Sundays, it's a weekend.
Oh, got it. So like the sales guys walk through there?
Correct.
Oh, they're cutting through.
Yeah, yeah. And there's guys and gals sitting there doing news stories
from
their desk. And then,
got it. And then so these salespeople are most certainly non-essential. The people...
the salespeople... I guess it is pretty funny. Non-essential. Hey, why didn't you show up to work today? Well, I was going to. At the door, it said essential personnel only. I figured you didn't need me.
Essential. I'm not essential to the operation of this business.
That's pretty funny.
I found as humorous. It's just like
it took me a while to catch on to that.
Does anyone show up at one day and go, I'm just not that important anymore?
If it said newsroom...
personnel only. That would make sense. That would kind of make sense.
Newsroom personnel only.
But when you say essential, do you think the general manager shows up one day? He's like, I don't know. I'm not feeling at the top of my game.
I don't know how essential I am today. Anyway, we find ourselves entertaining, and that's what's truly important in life.
I never noticed that. I was wondering if it was true.
I normally don't pay attention to warning signs. I just know what it says.
Warning. Dangerous cliff ahead. What do I care?
Oh, where do I see a sign saying dangerous cliff ahead?
I don't know.
I mean, you see those on a movie or something,
yeah,
right?
When like, dangerous when the...
There's just a little 2x4 or something that they bust through. And
when
the
road runner's being chased.
Yeah, come on. Anyway, to join, if you got a question for us, you'd like to be on the air, 921-1530 is the number to be part of the program here. You could also send us an email at... and we'll take some emails because we don't have to do this.
Yeah, we have... And we need to apologize, so... Right now, I will publicly apologize to my family, to my friends.
That's going to take some time.
And to those people that have been texting that we haven't gotten back to your text. We're going to hit as many of the texts as we possibly can today.
And emails.
And emails.
And the emails are, we'll hit as many.
What I said. We'll hit as many. We have been.
Not necessarily as possible. We could buzz through them super quick and answer the questions without getting into the
We will do our very best to answer complete questions, incomplete questions. And once again, accept my apologies.
Our emails, questions@moneymatters.com. And you can send us a text, 916 area code 229-9999. Laura asks us this. My husband and I have a family trust. Should our IRA accounts be in the trust, even though they have stated beneficiaries?
Good question. We get that question often.
A lot of misconceptions here. Yeah. And people set up a trust for a couple reasons. One, I mean, in the past, it used to be...
Can we summarize the question?
We just did.
She has an IRA. Should she name the trust as the IRA beneficiary? That was the question.
No, it said, should our IRA accounts be in the trust? So here's the thing.
Got it.
Here's the thing. In the past, most people set up a living trust because of estate tax purposes. Because it used to be that we could only transfer $600,000 upon our death before there was taxes. Then it went up to $1 million. Now it's essentially every individual can transfer up to $5 million either while they're living or at their death. Or up to $10 million if they're married and it's structured properly. A trust is a document within that document that will have the language in there to enable both a husband and wife to pass along their exemption, which is the reason a lot of people set these trusts up in the first place.
And made sense back in the day.
But here's where they also are beneficial, particularly in states like California, where the probate process is long and expensive. A trust, whatever's held inside of a trust, if we set up a trust, it's funny how these legal issues work, right? And we're not attorneys, nor do we tend to be practicing.
Nor did we want to be one, ever.
I never had a desire to be an attorney.
Never.
I think about it. Mm-mm. I have no desire to go to law school either.
Mm-mm.
Reading all case after case after case.
No.
How about being a litigator? That'd be a tough job. Anyway, now we digress. So a trust is just essentially a document that we set up that when we have this document set up properly and we list our assets in this trust properly, when we die, our assets get transferred without probate being involved.
According to the instructions in the trust.
Without some judge saying, yes, those assets should go there, or no, those assets should go somewhere else. So it avoids that probate process. There's still a process, mind you, something the estate plan attorneys don't always mention. It can still be timely and costly. But typically, things that have a beneficiary on them will automatically transfer without probate. So a life insurance policy, for example, transfers without probate.
An IRA transfers without probate. And remember,
401k.
The trust technically cannot own the IRA. Only an individual can own the IRA, technically.
Any retirement account.
But you can name the beneficiary of an IRA, 401k, life insurance, anything that names a beneficiary, you can name the trust.
Now, an IRA, it's an individual retirement account, must be owned by an individual. It cannot be owned by a trust. So if you have an IRA, say, oh, I would like to get this out of my name for credit purposes, so I protect it from creditors, and put it into my trust, you cannot do that.
It does not work.
If 401k, same thing. If you want to try to put the title in the trust, it will be a taxable event to you. No attorney would ever recommend that, but sometimes that's what people think they need to do. And in this case, Laura thought, we have this trust. Our IRA is not in the trust. Should it be in the trust? You'll never want your retirement account in the trust.
Sometimes you want to name the trust as the beneficiary of the IRA.
And sometimes you don't.
And this is when you want to. If your trust has, let's say, a spendthrift clause in there where you have minor children or you have dollars that you want to be paid out over a series of years, not as a lump sum to the beneficiaries, you may want to name the trust as a beneficiary. But if you're 70 years old and you've got three children and they're all grown children and responsible, and
same marriage,
and the trust says, when I die, all the assets go under there without these children without any restrictions, that's what your trust reads. There's no restrictions on how the money is distributed at your death. Then there's no sense in naming the
and
trust.
So oftentimes we'll see very simple estate planning issues. It's just, hey, my wife and I both pass away. We want all to divide it amongst our kids evenly.
No, you would just, in your IRA, you would just say divide the among.
Here's where it gets
the,
more.
The money among all the surviving children.
Here's where it gets more complicated. One, you've got a child, either a minor or somebody that you know it would be devastating to them. Wouldn't be a good thing to give them a bunch of money.
Correct.
That's where you'd want a trust involved. But also, and I think maybe even more common, on a second marriage or third marriage or whatever. So if you're married and you've got a couple kids of your own,
and wife has a couple kids,
now it can get a little more complicated. So you say, well, I'd like these dollars to be able to provide income for my spouse should I die first, but I want to make sure that whatever's left goes to my kids. Well, if you have your spouse listed as the primary beneficiary,
you have no control over that. It becomes your spouse's property at your death.
And your spouse, I know, he would be very devastated once you passed on. Let's assume they get remarried at another time in the future.
Then you have no idea where the money's going to end up.
And that's what we see. We see that. That's more common than you'd think, actually. And kids somehow get unintentionally disinherited.
Or if you have minor children. So on my own IRAs, my own 401k, my wife is the primary beneficiary, first marriage. The children are not the contingent beneficiary. The trust is the contingent beneficiary because there are stipulations in the trust as to how the money is paid out.
And that is essentially how mine is set up as well, is my spouse is primary beneficiary, trust is contingent beneficiary. And there are times when you want to have a trust set up. Just maybe you've got three kids, one kid's got an issue. You'll say, I want 67% to go to these two. I want the other 33% to be in a trust set up upon my death just for the benefit of this other person so that there's some restrictions involved so they're not getting them.
But great question.
Yeah, and it was a long answer, but we're trying to, get this. And this impacts the majority of retirees, because the majority of retirees have retirement dollars. And this is one area that I think is overlooked often. We need to take a quick break here to pay the bills and make sure that the sales staff here are essential to the...
correct.
Anyway, this is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Stick around for more. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad you are with us.
Final quarter hour of this incredible show.
Incredible.
We're doing the text and emails. We're catching up.
Pretty exciting, huh?
People email us and text us during the show and during the week. And we don't always get to them, so we've decided
we don't always take the... Most of the time, we make sure someone gets back to you. And if you want to send us an email or a text, questions@moneymatters.com.
We don't always take them on the air.
That's correct.
That's, yes.
questions@moneymatters.com. Or you can text us, 916-229-9999.
229.
How is texting
9999.
I find it peculiar that my phone, now I've got texts I need to respond to throughout the day. Plus, I've got... People send me messages through Facebook and through LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? So, Scott, it was my birthday a few weeks back. Thank you.
Happy birthday. I missed it.
Thank you.
I did get you the same thing I got you last
year. So. Thank you. Thank you.
How old are you today?
Enjoyed it.
Now,
52.
52. You don't look a day beyond 51 either.
I know.
That's good.
So, but I found it curious because I did. I got some Facebook deals where they're like, happy birthday, Pat. But then I got a couple texts from... numbers I didn't
know
that said, hey, Pat, happy birthday. Hope you have a great one. Tell Kathy and the kids I said hello. And
so they care about you enough to have your phone number, but you don't care about them enough to have their phone number. And they also cared enough to reach out to you and write a personal greeting.
Correct. So I'm like, what is the proper response to that?
It's thank you.
That's what I did. I just wrote, thank you.
At a time like that, you don't want to say, who is this?
Who is this? And then I thought, yeah, and the problem is people will call you from a number that you, right? And I don't always capture, I'll talk to them, hey, Jim, how are you? And I don't always capture that and make them a contact. In the phone?
This morning, my phone, Facebook, said there was a friend's birthday, and I sent her a little text, happy birthday. I think that if you're replying on Facebook, it doesn't mean anything, because Facebook just tells you whose birthday it is that day, and it's so easy to send a little happy.
Yeah. I have to respond to everyone that sent me the thing. Thank you. I had a marvelous day.
Respond to them all. It's so kind of you to think about me. All right, let's
actually, and I'm not quite sure how to do that, so... I got to get one of my kids involved.
How to do what?
If I respond on the thing.
What thing?
Does it on the Facebook?
The Facebook. On the line.
Never mind.
I don't know. Okay. My kids don't use Facebook anymore.
But they know how to use it.
Yeah, but
they've moved on.
They've moved on. My son told me he took down his Twitter account for 24 hours because he's like a... addicted to tweeting with everybody all the time about something. I don't know. Whatever. I'm like, whatever, son. Okay, so we're going to take in some questions, texts and emails, whatever. I have a variable life insurance for 30 years with $1,500 annual premium, and it has a $100,000 death benefit. So this person 30 years ago bought this variable life insurance policy. I now have a $90,000 cash value and a life insurance benefit of $150,000.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the few times I've seen this actually work out well for somebody.
I saw one the other day that worked out really, really well.
Oh, you did?
Really, really well. Although about 12 years ago, I lowered the face value on it so that it was accrue cash as fast as possible.
Okay. So here's someone 30 years ago
And I didn't sell it to the client. I don't sell life insurance, but I just want to make that clear.
So essentially, 30 years ago, this guy buys a variable universal life insurance policy. I wonder what percentage actually stay in force for 30 years.
Yeah.
A lot drop out after a couple of years, which is one of the reasons they don't work that well. So he's been putting in $1,500 a year. He's managed to accumulate $90,000 in it, and it has a $150,000 death benefit.
Okay.
Okay, here is...
Do we know how old he is?
No, we don't.
Okay.
But we can... My agent suggests to me that I use that $90,000 to buy a $350,000 life insurance policy. I plan to leave this to my children, and I can afford to pay the premium. Here's the issue with this. Of course, your insurance agent is going to suggest that you buy more insurance because your insurance agent gets paid by having you buy a new life insurance policy.
No question.
Or increasing the... my gut is, my bet would be that they would have you buy a new policy.
And take this and do a tax-free exchange into it in order to make the premiums. You know, Scott, it actually could make sense. He's not looking to accumulate any more capital in this, right? It may make sense.
If the plan is to, I plan to leave this to my children. Life insurance is a good thing to leave to people.
Yeah, it may make sense. One of the things that I would do is I would use a very, very, very conservative estimate of the growth of the contracts itself. And I actually don't know if I would cancel it and do a tax-free exchange as much as I would just buy a new $150,000 policy or $200,000 policy.
Yeah, but they've got their annual costs associated with them. The best probably...
I know, but my guess is that this has actually a pretty good cost structure inside of them. They're VULs. It's 30 years old. They didn't know how to price them very
correct.
Well.
And this old policy might be a lot better than... But you could probably increase the death benefit on this old policy.
Maybe.
That's what I would try to do. I would say, can I increase the face amount on my old policy rather than buying a new one? Because I bet the newer policies are more expensive.
That would be my guess. So I would be hesitant to get rid of this. I would be really hesitant to get rid of this.
Oh, there's more. I got four texts from this guy. He keep going on. CJ, he continues, should I continue to pay the premium or should I use my cash value to pay the premium or should I use all the lump sum to buy a new insurance?
We answered that. So I would probably keep this policy and buy a new $150,000 one. I seriously doubt
you. Why would you buy a new policy?
He wants $350,000 for his
heirs. No, that's what the agent said. The agent proposed that to
him. Oh, no, I would leave this alone. I'd let this sleeping dog lie.
No, the agent.
Oh, I thought he suggested.
No, the agent suggested.
Oh, no. I'd actually quit making deposits into the thing and leave it alone.
Here's the thing. Well, the challenge is this. Oftentimes, with a life insurance agent, they're good at understanding how the life insurance policies work, and they receive their compensation by selling you more life insurance. Which is fine. We actually believe most people need life insurance, not necessarily whole life insurance, but most people need life insurance. The challenge is this should really be looked at in concert with everything else that's happening in your life. What do you have in retirement plans? What do you have? What's your mortgage look like? Everything else. And a long-term plan. Then if we look at, okay, here's what your financial life will probably look like to your dying day, then work back and say, all right, what's the best way to factor all this in? And it might mean that you increase the death benefit. It might mean that you just quit paying into
it. My guess is that you'd be better off just leaving this thing alone and quit paying into it. That's what I would do.
Yeah, so there's our answer to that.
I would just leave it alone. Put pain into it.
Here, Lisa sends this. This was an email to questions@moneymatters.com. Do you recommend earthquake insurance? We have four single-family home rentals and our primary residence. We've never bought it in the past. I was thinking about getting it on the rentals and not on the primary. What do you think? We really appreciate your advice. This is from Lisa. Earthquake
insurance. I have owned earthquake insurance in my lifetime.
You have.
And there are times where I have not owned it.
Obviously, it never paid out for you.
No. Fortunately, it's never paid out for me.
So here's the challenge behind all this. When we see large national disasters, we see the government come up with all kinds of
programs. Oftentimes, not always, but often.
On large ones. Look at Hurricane Sandy.
Often.
Even there is Chris Christie, the conservative guy, begging for the bailout from Congress.
The question is, and so their thing is, maybe she's right. We'll do it on the rentals because we probably won't get bailed out on those. But the primary residence.
I don't own earthquake insurance on my primary residence, and I own rentals with no earthquake insurance on those. I have a friend that has worked for the whatever the earthquake authority is for a number of years.
They're the ones in charge of all the earthquakes.
The earthquake authority.
There's some California something or other where you tax. Anyway, it's actually.
And he or she owns or does not own that insurance.
Does not.
So I guess it's just all risk mitigation. So the question is, how much does it cost? And am I willing to absorb that risk or not? I personally, at this stage in my life, am willing to absorb that risk. There was a time earlier in my life, 15 years ago, when I bought earthquake insurance on my home.
Because of the time you wouldn't be able to afford to...
It would have been financially devastating to me to have lost my home in an earthquake.
Well, if you've got four rentals...
You're probably doing okay.
But it would be financially devastating if they're all in the same area and an earthquake wiped them all out.
I would consider it.
I would probably consider it. Now I'm starting to second guess myself.
I would consider it. I would consider
the,
it.
The challenge is...
How much are the premiums? I have no idea. I know that at the time, they were not cheap. It was not cheap.
Yeah, I don't think... It's that inexpensive, earthquake insurance. And they also have large deductibles on them. So, you know, you got to have extensive damage before they're actually going to pay you anything. But insurance... there'll be a time, again, when this state's going to have a pretty big earthquake, right?
Yeah. And the question you've got to ask yourself is, how much is the government going to step in and fix it for us?
Well, that's the question, right?
And do I want to...
that's what they tend to do in other natural disasters. So if you're really that concerned, maybe go and look at what's actually happened. What happened with Hurricane Sandy?
Or...
what happened with the hurricanes down in Florida?
If they're all in the same geographic area, and sure, half of them. No, sure, the older ones. The ones that are the construction standard.
Yeah, then pray for the earthquake.
All right, so...
anyway, we are out of time. The clock says that we were running out of time. Hanson McLean's Money Matters comes here each week. We're here broadcast live Saturdays from 10 to 11. Actually, sometimes they're recorded, but they're fresh shows Saturdays from 10 to 11. We run reruns.
Yeah, that's correct.
Previously recorded programs.
Or reruns on Sundays.
On Sundays from 2 to 3. During the week, if you'd like to learn more about Hanson McLean, you can visit our website at hansonmclean.com. You can sign up for a podcast of this very program, so it gets delivered to you each week if you'd like. And while you're there, you can learn more about other things that we offer at Hanson McLean. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you next week.